Who here gets mathematics? Like, loves mathematics? Okay, a few people here. Well, I'm not particularly mathematical. Surprise, surprise. My natural instinct is to count on my fingers and then stop when I run out, which apparently is a thing. Most of our brains actually struggle with maths. Without any training, a lot of people would struggle to even see the number 3. We just register more. So, forgive me if I get any maths wrong this morning. Michael Brooks has recently published a book looking at how mathematics created the world as we know it, and he begins by acknowledging how maths is not natural to human beings. And yet so much of our society now rests on mathematical discoveries and understandings. Because of the triangle, we learned how to map and navigate our way across the world. Geometry helps us create bigger and more complex buildings and artwork. Algorithms, calculus, statistics, imaginary numbers have started and finished wars, propelled technological breakthroughs like the internet, brought global travel, and so much more. And one of the first shifts to take place, believe it or not, was when people started to keep financial records. In other words, accounting. With accounting came the possibility of bigger societies. Suddenly, there were better ways to trade with other people groups, and then govern, and then tax larger and larger amounts of people. This is how societies and empires grew. Accounting was revolutionary. Mathematics can be driven by this desire, I think, to find and create order in our world. Mathematics can give us knowledge and a degree of control. And that desire for order is then often imprinted onto whole societies. Maths, like everything else, can be abused and exploited. It has been said that the favorite geometric shape for most rulers is the triangle. Triangles don't just help us map out the world, they can be the pattern for a civilization. We seem to love hierarchies, don't you think? You have someone right at the top, the ruler, who often also claims, at least in the ancient world, to be a god, like Shugli, for example. Ruler of Ur around 2094 BC to 2046 BC. He declared himself to be a god and loved for people to write poems about his abilities, including his great mathematical ability. He knew the value of mathematics and ensured that mathematics became an essential part of a scribe's training. We have all these ancient clay tablets with numbers and tables and divisions as the scribes practiced. Shugli knew there's a lot of power when you could control the numbers, so the scribes worked for him. He undertook massive construction projects like building the Great Ziggurat and also roads so he could trade with more and more people. Now, this brought a lot of good, marvels like the Great Ziggurat, and there was this growing exchange of goods and also knowledge. His government created prosperity, at least for those at the top of the triangle. By the time Jesus was alive, this triangular pattern was pretty firmly established and adopted kind of by all different civilizations. Jesus lived in a time when the Roman Empire ruled his homeland. Trade, government, and taxes were part of life. And yet, prosperity was not what everyone was experiencing. The people who paid the greatest amount of tax tended to be those who were the poorest, those who worked the land, peasants and tenant farmers in the provinces. They were at the bottom of the triangle, large base to draw from. Then at the top of the triangle were the wealthy Romans, and they didn't have to pay any tax. As you might expect, this caused people to be quite resentful of Rome. The tax system was complicated, and more taxes were being constantly added. Taxes for water, food, road, house, temple, city. And to ensure the tax was collected, Rome employed local tax collectors. Sometimes they'd even actually auction these rolls off for some lucky few. If you had enough money, it was a chance to kind of scramble up from the bottom. So you'd kind of buy your way in, and then you'd go around, often accompanied by soldiers, who'd beat up anyone who refused to pay, unless, you know, maybe a bribe could be worked out to keep the tax collector at bay, at least for a little while. It was common for tax collectors to extort money for themselves, which of course resulted in them, you know, being slightly, I guess, wealthy, relatively wealthy, but also greatly feared and hated by the rest of their community. Now, the Jewish people didn't want Rome to rule, and yet they too were drawn to this pyramid structure. They desired to have a powerful ruler like the Emperor of Rome, who would govern them, trade with other nations, tax them to build beautiful buildings. The difference was such a ruler would be appointed by God, who obviously was at the top of the triangle. Instead, they had a foreign ruler. The order wasn't quite right. This longing was for God to come and set everything back to the way it should be. But does God really like triangles as much as we seem to? Is this hierarchy really God's ideal pattern? And if so, why on earth is Mark writing to us about Jesus? I mean, the Gospel of Mark starts off like you might expect. Mark says he is writing the good news about Jesus, the Messiah, in other words, the King Israel has been waiting for, the Son of God. But then, instead of meeting Jesus in a rich palace where you'd expect to meet a king, you see this man wandering around small towns and villages in Galilee. He's hanging out with tenant farmers and peasants at the bottom of the pyramid, and he's bringing healing to ordinary women and men and calling fishermen and the like to follow him and be his disciples. Okay, so apparently this is a ruler who doesn't trade with other nations or tax people, and if he governs, it's not how we naturally think of government. And just as we begin to wrap our minds around that, we read how once again Jesus is walking beside the Lake of Galilee, followed by a large crowd who he's teaching, when this happens. Mark 2 verse 14. As he walked along, he saw Levi, son of Alphaeus, sitting at the tax collector's booth. "Follow me," Jesus told him, and Levi got up and followed him. Jesus is no longer just talking to the people at the bottom of the triangle. He's talking with someone a little bit higher up. He's talking with a tax collector of all people. Remember what I just said about tax collectors? Levi is one of those people working for the empire, one of those who extort and oppress and beat up others. A Jew who collected taxes wasn't allowed to be a judge in the local courts. Nobody would take a tax collector's charity. People believed just touching a tax collector would make them unclean in God's sight. Why on earth would Jesus bother with someone who was so corrupt? I thought Jesus was trying to do something different by focusing on those at the bottom, but now here he is inviting this tax collector to be a disciple, to follow him, and the tax collector responds by inviting Jesus back to his place for a meal, and Jesus accepts his hospitality. Nobody can understand it. I don't think it's just the Pharisees who are shocked. I think a lot of people would have been shocked to see Jesus eating not just with Levi, but many tax collectors. They're scratching their heads, trying to work out what this means for Jesus to be eating with such sinners. There wasn't just a fixed political order, but there was also a pretty set religious order, and its shape was a triangle. God at the top, and then often religious leaders like priests or people like the Pharisees who had very strict and elaborate rules they followed to honor God. Then those who did good, you know, those who were trying to keep God's law, and then those who broke God's law, those who interacted with the enemy like Rome, those at the bottom like tax collectors and prostitutes. Good people don't interact with bad people. Who you eat with reflects who you are. Are you a good person or are you a bad person? Yet Jesus is bouncing all over the pyramid. One moment he is hanging out with working class fishermen. The next moment he is debating religious leaders. The moment after that he is sitting around a table eating with Roman collaborators. Jesus violates the political and religious order of his day by who he eats with. And people are shocked. He explains why he is doing this in Mark 2, verse 17. It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners. Jesus looks around and he sees that there is something sick within us and the pyramid structures we have created. But he doesn't believe that we have to stay sick or that these systems are unfixable. He says, I'm here to bring healing and change. I have come to call sinners to me, people who feel like they are at the bottom of the religious order. Jesus welcomes them, which is what we think of when we think of hospitality. But then Jesus also calls people to change. As Levi and his friends sit with Jesus around the table, they are changed. Jesus calls Levi to follow him. Now this will cost Levi. It will mean he'll potentially have to give up his position in Rome's pecking order because it's corrupt or radically change, learn to use his privilege to help others. God is not sitting far away at the top of the pyramid. God is right here at a dinner party and he is saying that Levi is sick. The way he is living is making him sick. And this resonates with Levi. He recognizes he is a sinner. Things aren't right. And even though it costs him, he chooses to become a follower of Jesus. Jesus is looking for people who recognize they are sinners. And that can be anyone who feels like the way they're living is not quite right. The choices they're making are not quite right. Jesus is looking for sinners so he can pour grace into them. There is grace for all, and the grace of God changes not just individuals but can topple down oppressive structures. The grace of God sets people free. The grace of God seeks the prosperity of everyone, not just a privileged few. Today, the word privilege has become a bit of a buzzword in some circles. I don't know if you've heard it before, but privilege is just another word for recognizing the power of the pyramid. There are still those at the top of the triangle in our world, right? Like people who have more privilege than others. It can come from where we're born, our opportunities for education, how much money our parents had, and then also what our bodies look like, our gender, our sexual orientation, our race, how able-bodied we are, how old we are. All these things intersect with some people at an advantage, higher up the triangle, so to speak. Part of the reason why we mark Reconciliation Week is to begin to acknowledge that our First Nations people have often been shoved down to the bottom of the triangle. The argument that has been put forward by quite a number of people now is that a lot of our privilege is rooted in historic or even present day injustice. Could we be sinners? Could we be part of sinful structures? That can be an uncomfortable question to ask. And the privilege we have is to some extent inescapable. So the bigger question is, well, what can we do? What can we do with our privilege? Well, there's a few directions we can go. We can pretend like it doesn't exist. No sin here. We are righteous. Kind of not really in need of God's grace. Or maybe we'll think God has ordained this triangular structure. There are many, including many Christians, who've argued over the years that there is a fixed hierarchical order that all societies and churches must conform to, endorsed by God himself, that we must preserve. God is at the head, and then he's appointed rulers, which tend to be white men, and white women are down and down, we can map it out. No sin here unless that order is broken. But is this the way of Jesus? Jesus used his privilege to spend time with sinners. He says there is something wrong, and he has come to forgive, to heal, to sit down and have a meal with whoever, and he calls people to change their ways. If people follow Jesus, I think our society would be quite different to what it is now. If we say we are followers of Jesus, if we say we know this grace, then we are to enter into this work, says Gillard, an African-American theologian who says, "While the entire system is guilty, as we work to transform broken systems, we also need eyes to see the people of God within these systems who need to be called to repentance. As the people of God who are integrated within broken systems and structures awaken to their sinful complicity, we establish kingdom pressure points that help us topple oppressive structures that counteract the will of God." What might that look like? Well, there was a triangular and very sick structure in place in France in the 18th century. Jacques Necker was a banker who in 1777 found himself appointed to the role of finance minister for King Louis XVI. He was a Protestant Christian in a Catholic country, and he took his job seriously, seeking to make the tax system fairer, abolishing some taxes, trying to reform the budget. His goal was to see the books balanced. He believed that a healthy society was one where auditing took place. Such a society, he argued, would be both moral and prosperous. He mixed with the wealthy, but also he and his wife spent time caring and visiting ordinary people in hospitals and in prisons. Eventually, he got into trouble because he started to expose some of the corruption and the indulgence of the royals. In 1781, he released the budget for the whole nation to see. Now, there's a big debate about how accurate this budget was, but at the time, the royals were just outraged because he revealed it and soon dismissed him. This angered a lot of the more radicals in France who started calling for revolution, and so came the French Revolution. Jacques Necker was by no means perfect. He got things wrong. But in a corrupt system, he found himself trying to figure out how to live another way. Sin is still part of our lives. Trade, government, and taxes are still part of our lives. And we know, don't we, that prosperity is not what everyone experiences in our society. There are growing pressures on many. There are people right now who are struggling, who feel like they're at the bottom, worried about inflation, unable to get into the housing market, not sure how they'll pay for everything they need to this week. Maybe that's some of us here. Or maybe that feels far away, just something we hear on the news. But here we are, sinners who are trying to follow Jesus. Christians need to be able to call out what is sick in our society, particularly when we see corruption and exploitation. In Jesus' kingdom, mathematics, taxes, accounts, money are to be used to lift up the neediest. In Jesus' kingdom, good governance is important. We need transparency and accountability, and we try to model that in how we structure church. In Jesus' kingdom, everyone has a role. We need Christians who are bankers and accountants and mathematicians, who work in government and business, who are not simply in it for themselves, scrambling up the ladder, but who are serious about following Jesus. We need Christians bouncing all over the pyramid, learning to sit around a table with other sinners, enjoying God's work of bringing life and prosperity to all. So, as you sit at the table with Jesus this morning, I wonder, what is Jesus calling you to change? I want to give you a moment now. There's little triangles on your seats. To spend some time in prayer, responding to what we've been listening to this morning. What is Jesus calling you to change? Let's spend some time reflecting and hearing God speak.